All right, good afternoon. Let me begin by running through the week ahead. Then we'll have some details of an announcement, and then I want to make some proactive statements around the emerging issue of a foreign terrorist fighter who has identified themselves. Starting with Tuesday, obviously a normal sitting day. Wednesday, I'll be speaking at Annette King's book launch at the Backbencher. On Thursday, I'm in Christchurch to present the first recipients of the Te Uru Rākau Forestry Scholarships with their awards. I'll also provide an update to a business audience at the Canterbury Employers Chamber of Commerce luncheon. I'm back in Wellington on Friday to speak at the Zonta International Women's Day breakfast event at Parliament. The Auckland Arts Festival also opens this week, so on Friday night I'll be speaking at the opening of that. To begin with, I want to make some comments, particularly with my status as the Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage alongside Minister Farfoy. Many New Zealanders are being subject to ticketing scams and fraud, including unknowingly buying tickets at inflated prices from unofficial sites. Professional scalpers are using ticket bots to buy up large quantities of tickets online and then resell them at hugely inflated prices. Now, concerns about this practice has already resulted in bots being banned in overseas jurisdictions, the likes of the United States, the UK, and parts of Australia. Increasingly, New Zealanders have brought to our attention the issue of ticket scalping. Many people have already lost out both financially and on experiences by purchasing tickets for events through unscrupulous ticket sellers and resale websites. Now, I have personally often heard terrible stories, simply put, consumers aren't getting a fair deal. But I equally hear from artists that they are devastated to hear that people who come to see them are being taken advantage of. Given the issues caused and the manifestly unfair impact ticket scalping has, we are going to do something about it. I'd like to point out, though, before I hand over to the Minister to share some details, that ticket scalping issues do not only affect large international shows, it also affects our local cultural sector. For example, Te Matatini, the National Kapahaka Festival that just recently took place in Wellington, had some tickets being listed for $498. The four-day pass was originally priced at $100. This is blatantly unfair and not good for consumers nor the organisers. So, to share measures we plan to enact to protect consumers from ticket scalping, I'm going to hand over to the Minister, Chris Barfoy.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Just before I start, I want to make clear that there is a distinction between who we are targeting here. Many people do on sell tickets for legitimate reasons. For example, if they can't attend a concert or an event anymore, and I think we all agree that there's nothing wrong with that. But as the Prime Minister said, there is a big problem with these tickets are bought specifically to be on sold to make a profit, and it's a big problem when unscrupulous resale websites are ripping off New Zealanders. Work undertaken by officials recently has shown that the average ticket resale profit was around $195 for a recent high demand concert, and 80% of those tickets were resold above the face value, some as much as 205% above, with 205% profit, though I have heard of markups of up to 400%. Research undertaken by Consumer New Zealand in 2017 showed that 54% of people who responded had paid more than face value for tickets, 40% were charged hidden fees, and another 40% had bought from a website that understood to be an official seller that wasn't. It also found that 6% of consumers purchased a ticket that was fake, and 13% had bought tickets that had never arrived. And none of this is fair to consumers, as it means they'll be left out of pocket, and in some cases missing events. We're committed to better protecting Kiwis when they buy tickets, including a price cap on resale tickets. We also believe there needs to be better information disclosure, so know if you're buying a resale ticket and what the original price was. We also believe that we're ready to address the professional scalpers who, as the Prime Minister said, are using ticket bots to buy up large quantities of tickets online and then resell them at hugely inflated prices. While Cabinet has agreed our intent to address this issue, we are going to consult on our proposals to ensure there's nothing additional that we need to do here. So we want to hear from Kiwis about what they think would work best. While I've had already many productive meetings with the events sector, I want to give them a further opportunity to input into what measures are needed. A consultation will run till April the 18th. From there, legislation will be drafted and I hope enacted within this parliament term, but we have set a clear policy direction. I know this is an issue that the Commerce Commission is concerned about. They've been pursuing Bendigo through the courts. And while that's selective, I can't comment. But I think from most people's experiences, the general message with Bendigo, if you want to make sure you get to a concert and pay a fair price, is don't confuse them.
Do you have a sense of the scale from how do you
look? Look, I think some of that earlier work by Consumer New Zealand, as I say, 6% of consumers had purchased fake resale tickets, and those are the stories that we're seeing through the media when people turn up to events and can't get into events. 30% had purchased tickets that never arrived. 14 had their credit cards overcharged. And again, consumers denied at the venue. So it is a significant problem. There's little or no protection for consumers at the moment unless it's one of the events under the legislation that is currently there. So this will give broader protection to those consumers who have been called out by some of these websites.
How
do you actually stop a bot? Oh, yeah, so this is a global problem. And enforcement is an issue, and I think certainly in Australia there has been some attempts to try and stop bots selling tickets, that had some problems. But that's where a lot of the problems with the bulk of tickets are being bought are being unsold. So I don't think we should give up trying to find a solution to the bot problem, because that's how some of these resale sites are getting the quantity of tickets that they get.
Especially when we're not alone, alongside the United States and the likes of the UK, in trying to resolve those issues.
So there's no solution
in my mind
as to how you do that.
There's some solutions to varying effectiveness, but that means we won't give up and try to ensure that we can stop some of those purchases by a large amount of tickets.
What are some of the solutions?
Well, obviously, we've talked about information disclosure, so making sure that if you are looking at buying a ticket that is being resold, you know what the face value is. Price cap is, again, one of the options. The recently in New South Wales, and in some other Australian jurisdictions, they put a 10% cap above on the face value for what a ticket can be sold. If you look at some of the profit that some people are making off tickets, that's exorbitant, and that is either money that should be staying with the consumer or isn't being passed on to the promoters or the artists, and I think that's a big issue.
Why does this become an issue for the government rather than a buyer beware situation?
Because the buyer beware isn't working.
Yeah, I mean, when you have, you know, when you see stories of people who have, you know, put their hard-earned money into a gift or an event for a special occasion, and they believe they've bought a ticket legitimately and they have not, or they've put in a huge outlay over and above the original ticket price, it's just not fair. And in some cases, they're not even getting entry to the event. Now, it's devastating for those individuals. It's actually devastating for the artists as well when they hear these stories. So I think there's an obligation and a responsibility on us to do something about it.
It's already illegal, right, to sell fake tickets. Mm. Are you going to correct them
in that area? Yeah, so that's where the information disclosure is going to come in. If you're going to sell a ticket or resell a ticket on the lines of trade, you're going to have to disclose what the original ticket price was, potentially where the ticket is, the seat and the row, etc. Because some people literally buy tickets sight unseen. So and that is a big issue. Full disclosure, I went to the Eagles on the weekend and someone in the line when I was leaving Dunedin said they bought a ticket for about $200 over the face value and it wasn't the ticket that they were expecting. So if they had the information, they'd be able to be better informed consumers.
Did you buy a ticket from Viagogo?
Did I?
Yeah.
No, because my last people was not to buy tickets from Viagogo.
It's obviously easy to get trade meter for that, something like that, but a lot of the stuff would happen on Facebook event pages, right? It would be very informal person to person.
Yeah,
so
maybe
you're going to be able to crack down on that.
Yeah, we hope to, because hopefully now consumers will know that we're pretty keen on making sure that there will be a seat value that you can sell resale tickets at that. The consultation period is open for April the 18th, and we're hoping to get some feedback from the likes of trade meter who have already met, but also people who might primarily look at buying tickets.
Are you willing to increase the funding for enforcement? Because a lot of this is because there's very light-handed regulation in this area.
Not necessarily. I don't think it's necessarily light-handed. I think some of the efforts in the bot domain might mean that we have to seriously look at that. But again, those policy decisions haven't finally been made. We're looking for making sure we get some consultation and looking at the experience from the likes of Australia, who have just done this recently too.
How much of this falls on the promoter? Should all promoters have a resale option for your original site?
Some of the issues with ticket selling remain the domain of the ticket providing company. So in amongst some of the consultation, we'll look at the structure of the ticket selling industry as well, because some of them sell in the primary market and also resale in the secondary market. So they're having two chunks of getting some profit off some of those tickets. And again, you don't think that's necessarily fair for consumers.
And so will you increase in terms of the public campaign as well?
Well, hopefully now that this is out there, the consultation is out there, we want to make sure that a lot of people can have their say. We've spoken to the likes of trade, we've spoken to the likes of a lot of promoters, and we understand a lot of the arts community are very keen to make sure this is happening, because at the moment a lot of consumers and performers are missing out.
Would you allow that be needed by these changes in 2012 that they have been in place?
I don't know.
Did this emerge out of the issues at the M&M concert over the weekend? Did this emerge as a result of...
No, it's been on the agenda for a while.
You'll see from the example I use, obviously Tamatatini is but one, and the point that I think we really want to make, and we use an example in the press statement, which is much more localised, this is not just about large-scale international events, it's affecting our local artists and... ultimately, regardless of whether it's at large events or small events, people are being adversely affected.
You guys talk about trade and then Henry touched on about the Facebook group. So just to be clear, you're looking at targeting the big companies that are those secondary ticket sites like Viagoga, or you're also looking to target everyday New Zealanders who are selling.
We differentiate between the two. That's one point that I would make. But obviously, it's the large ones where we see bots being used. But I'll let the minister comment on the resale business scalpers.
Yeah, look. In terms of TradeMe, we've spoken to them. I don't think it would be a big issue for them to change the form that people would have to fill in to sell tickets on their website. But again, as the Prime Minister said, the bulk of the problem is when you're getting large-scale tickets being bought up and being sold on some of these resale websites. Again, Viagoga being one of the biggest issues, are an issue for regulators around the world, and that regulator is taking action against them in the High Court at the moment, so I won't say much more than that. But again, the general message is, if you're looking at Viagoga, don't go there.
What sort of repercussions would companies like Viagoga expect if this is the...
Interesting with the Viagoga space, because the regulators around the world are dealing with it, and we're in the middle of High Court action at the moment. Some of the issue with Viagoga is that they are claiming to be the official ticket reseller when they're patently not. So it's those kinds of issues that the Commerce Commission is trying to deal with in the High Court at the moment, but they're trying to get some certainty in, and we're trying to deal with the issue from the other end in the regulatory sense too.
So would that be able to be enforced
for
companies like the Facebook
space? Again, that's what I'm saying. Viagoga are an issue for regulators around the world, so our regulator is taking action in the High Court at the moment, and we'll need to do that if that doesn't fit.
Right, any other questions on this issue? Right, thank you, Mr. Farquhar. I might ask Mr. Hill to join me for this part of our post-cabinet briefing. I want to make some comment on the case of Mark Taylor, who is currently detained by the Syrian Democratic Forces. New Zealand has made it very clear from the outset that New Zealanders should not travel to Syria. Further, it is clear that it is unlawful to join and fight with a terrorist organisation as Mark Taylor has done. His actions in joining ISIS and travelling to Syria to fight for them has created the potential for legal ramifications in New Zealand. As with any New Zealand citizen overseas, if they wish to return to New Zealand, then a journey-specific emergency travel document can be issued under Section 23 of the Passports Act 1992. However, New Zealand does not have diplomatic representation in Syria, and the ability of the government to assist New Zealand citizens is severely limited. That is why we made it very clear from the outset, no New Zealander should travel to Syria. We have consistently told Mark Taylor that we cannot help him obtain a travel document. He would need to make his own way to a country where New Zealand has consular representation, something that in his current situation will be difficult to do. All New Zealand citizens have rights under international and domestic law. Mr. Taylor only holds New Zealand citizenship. And the government has an obligation not to make people stateless. While I cannot comment on the specifics of this case, I can assure you that we have long had plans in place in the event that a New Zealand citizen supporting ISIS in Syria were to return. It would involve a comprehensive response and management plan for any individual. The safety of New Zealand and New Zealanders is our priority. Contingency planning has been underway for some time, involving the New Zealand Police and other agencies. I am confident we have the means to keep New Zealanders safe in this case. I reiterate again, while I cannot talk about the specifics of this case, I am confident we have the means to keep New Zealanders safe. Bringing terrorists to justice is something the government takes extremely seriously. As I've said before, any New Zealander suspected of association with terrorist groups should expect to be investigated under New Zealand law should they return. The police have powers under a number of acts, and I am assured they will utilise them. Happy to take any.
Does not Taylor pose a threat? Does not Taylor pose a threat to New Zealand?
Look, as I've said, I cannot get into the specifics of this case. It is in the public domain, however, that this individual has associated himself with a designated terrorist organisation. New Zealand has laws in place to deal with those circumstances, and we have contingency in place to deal with those situations. We have the means in this case, and I'm confident we do, to keep New Zealand safe.
And if he does somehow make his way back to New Zealand,
sorry, what was that?
If he does somehow make his way back to New Zealand, he would be arrested.
I cannot specifically respond to a question around what the police will do, but I am confident that we have the means and the ability in this case to keep New Zealanders safe.
How likely is it that he'll be able to make his way back to New Zealand?
Look, as we've said from the very outset, you know, apart from the fact that obviously individuals in this case like Mike Taylor have associated themselves with a designated terrorist organisation, we made very clear travel advice was do not travel to Syria, because if you do, we cannot help you return. We've made that clear. New Zealand does not have a presence in Syria. We have no connection with the forces detaining those currently in Syria. And that is one of the reasons why the advice has been so clear.
So you think that's unlikely?
Oh, look, you know, I can't get into hypotheticals, but this is very much one of the issues. We obviously do not have representation in Syria. It would have to require an individual to reach consular support in order for them to then obtain emergency travel documents.
But then he is a New Zealand citizen, surely, that doesn't he have some sort of cross accreditation for Syria?
No.
Diplomatically?
No.
Where is the nearest?
Turkey.
So we're not prepared to help a New Zealand citizen?
We've made,
it doesn't matter what the indication you told New Zealanders not to travel there. You've just said that he is a New Zealand citizen. So as a citizen, you shouldn't he be assisted in a time of need?
We've made it absolutely clear that because we do not have a presence in Syria, it is why we've advised no one to enter into Syria, because we are not equipped to assist those who do. And those who directly, look to join designated terrorist organisations. We could not have been clearer on the advice for this very set of circumstances.
Your message.
Look, I do absolutely acknowledge, though, we have obligations around an individual citizenship, and this is a New Zealand citizen, but we are limited as to what we can do when someone chooses to travel to a place that we advise them specifically not to go.
Looking at the penalty regime,
you're on your own.
Oh, look, we have made it clear under what circumstances assistance could be given. At this current point in time, it would require him being able to make contact with one of our New Zealand representatives, and in this case, it would most likely be, in that case, Turkey.
I wonder whether...
Recently, we had this question at Select Committee. And you recall that Rebecca Kitteridge made reference to, without a specific number, a very small number. We haven't given specificity, but we have said a very small number.
Looking at the penalty ratio.
Jump in at any time, Minister, if you want to add any
clarification. I wonder if I could put a question.
Sorry, well, just one at a time.
Sorry. Just a question for Minister Little. The Prime Minister referred to to various acts under which such an individual could be prosecuted. Could you indicate the penalty regime? Because I'm aware that Mr. Taylor has said that he expects to be in jail for a couple of years if he does return.
Yeah, I can't get ahead of either decision to prosecute or what the consequences of a prosecution might be. Terrorism Suppression Act is one piece of legislation.
What is the penalty regime, speaking in general terms, under that act?
I don't have that detail off the top of my head, but it is very clear what happens when you transgress the provisions in that legislation. There's a range of penalty provisions, including imprisonment.
Do you know anything about the conditions of Mr. Taylor's detention? Has he been treated humanely?
No, I do not. And again, we have no connections with the forces detaining him, so it's difficult for us to provide that level of information. Obviously, there is access for international journalists, so in that regard, really would be reliant on the information that's coming out in that field.
That was the last time New Zealand officials had contact with
him. I can't give that specific detail.
The US had urged its allies to act and to bring the guys hot. Are you taking notice of that advice?
Oh, look, I've certainly seen comments in that regard, but we have some limitations, obviously, in the fact that New Zealand has no presence in Syria. We, of course, follow our obligations in international law regarding ensuring that we do not deem anyone stateless, but that's quite a different story, again, from us actually having a presence in this conflict zone, which we do not.
But are you effectively making him stateless if you don't do anything to help him?
No.
If the naturalisation was a part, if he had citizenship...
Sorry, what was that?
If he had another citizenship, would you seek to end his New Zealand citizenship?
Again, we don't have some of the automated legislation that you hear other countries enforcing. And so that's not a provision that exists within New Zealand law. But even those, currently, my understanding is that even those who have legislation around dual citizenship are not intentionally necessarily seeking to make individuals stateless, because many of them will be signatories to the same conventions that we are.
Can't say that that stat reveals his exact coordinates in Syria as well as other members of Islamic State. I mean, where do you think he sits on that spectrum of threat?
And look, again, I don't want to get into the specifics of this individual case because I don't want to be in the position of jeopardising any future case involving this individual. But as I've set out right from the outset, regardless, the advice has been very, very clear for any individual considering travelling to Syria: do not travel.
But he has been there for 5 years. That would precede any warnings this government might have given about travel to Syria.
I think the advice, as far as I'm advised, has been relatively clear for that entire period.
You said that he had to make contact with people in Turkey from New Zealand, but do you mean just by phone, or do you have to physically...
Again, I'm using the next possible point of contact. It's obviously not limited to that particular form of consular assistance. But in terms of the issuing of a travel document, yes, under usual scenarios, that would require someone to be able to be physically present. We are getting into hypotheticals here, but the point is, in terms of there is not the ability for us to provide that documentation into Syria.
Have the people who are holding Mr. Taylor indicated what they want to happen? Do they want to repatriate him, or they get up on...
Again, I don't want to get into individual details about any given case, but I will reiterate that we have no connection with the forces who are detaining him. I will, however, give the assurance that it exists. And the assurance that I generally want to give to New Zealanders is that their safety is our absolute priority. And so that contingency planning is in place in the event that we have someone who is a New Zealand citizen return, keeping in mind we are only talking about very, very small numbers.
This is family made representations for any government
agency. I'm not going to get into any specific details around this.
He made some comments to the ABC about regretting not being able to afford a slave. I mean, did you see some of his comments?
I did.
And what's your reaction?
You'll understand that I wouldn't want to be drawn on those comments because I do not want to be seen to jeopardise any potential case in the future.
If he was able to make it to Turkey, how would he physically get back? Because I wouldn't imagine that it would be easy for a Labour global terrorist to be able to get on a plane.
Yes, I imagine, and again, very much hypotheticals, I imagine that would require some form of facilitation. No, not necessarily. That, again, that's not something I want to give too much comment to at this point, but we're clear on what our obligations are. That does not include, for instance, paying for anyone to return to New Zealand. We are not obliged to provide that.
Have any other New Zealand citizens in Syria been in touch and asked for?
Again, I won't get into that level of detail.
Okay. It's just another issue, it's okay. The Labour...
So can I just check, is there any more question on this, and then I'll take a couple of more generals? I just don't want to hold the Minister for long.
I just wondered, if he's subject to judicial proceedings offshore, would we feel obliged to provide him with legal support?
We don't typically do that with people who get into trouble overseas. Consular assistance is to the extent of checking that they are okay, and that is it, but we don't provide assistance for legal representation.
Minister, in the UK they've stripped a couple of Islamic State fighters of their UK citizenship, but am I correct in thinking that New Zealand doesn't have that ability to strip people of their citizenship?
In those cases, they are people with dual citizenship, and in this case, Mr. Taylor has only New Zealand citizenship, and states like ours are obliged not to render people stateless citizens.
So it's not quite comparing the same situation. Last question.
Is there actually a mechanism in New Zealand law, if there was someone who was a dual citizenship, could you tomorrow, if it came up, strip them of any sort?
There is the Citizenship Act. It is, which is a long-standing act, but it is very tightly drafted in terms of the circumstances under which someone could lose their citizenship under this act. It has not been drafted specifically for these scenarios. I would acknowledge, though, that the cases that we tend to be seeing are around dual citizenship, though, rather than removing someone's single citizenship, which is the case with Mark Taylor. All right, I'll just finish that there and then just go on to that. Thank you.
The Labour Party in Australia has accused the government there of giving jobs to maids after Foreign Minister Maurice Payne appointed Patricia Forsyth, who's a friend of the Foreign Minister and also a former Liberal MP, as a High Commissioner to New Zealand. Do you see that as an appropriate appointment?
You'll obviously expect that I would not and will not comment on the appointments made by another country in terms of their representative in New Zealand. That is entirely a matter for them.
The Green Party have indicated that they would like to implement the 2012 recommendations running change from the Royal Commission without a referendum ahead of the next election, but it was lowering the threshold of 4%.
Yes.
They say that they had a referendum there. So, do you share?
Yeah, look, I've alongside the Labour Party viewed favourably those recommendations from the Royal Commission. And obviously there's a discussion being had as to whether or not that's a decision that should be open to the public as well. But we're certainly on record as seeing merit in what the Royal Commission produced.
That was as the Labour Party, but yes, as the government itself, can you rule out can you say whether you're going to...
And as I just said, whilst we view the Royal Commission as having some merit, some discussion as to whether or not that should be a question that we pose to the public.
What's the clarify you're not ruling it out?
Oh, I think we're having a discussion as to whether or not that is something that should be brought to the public. I'm not going to put a time frame down on that.
Would you be concerned about the perception that you'd be saying to small parties in government that you were to lower the threshold? Would that be a...
No, I don't think so, because it obviously was something raised by the Royal Commission as opposed to by political parties. Okay, right.
Just a question about Justin Trudeau. Has he shared many of the same goals we have in supporting a rules-based international order?
Has he shared many of the same goals? Oh, look, I haven't analysed every single statement that he's made around trade. But certainly when it comes to the progressive trade agenda and trade for all, I certainly know Canada's been supportive of that.
Yeah, and I just wondered whether his resignation, which is being mooted at the moment because of a scandal back home, would his departure be a setback for our program in this respect?
It's very much a hypothetical that you'll understand I won't be getting into. Thanks,
Chris. Can I just ask another question? Please,
just feel free to yell.
Right, are you comfortable about James Jenish at least sitting on the board of the New Zealand Shrine Council in light of Mainzeal ruling and also the comments that she made to the Chinese media?
Look, ultimately, that is not a matter for government or cabinet. That is not a point that's made by us. Okay, thank you.